Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and our incarnational introduction this evening is from 2 Timothy 2:8. Be remembering Jesus Christ, risen from the dead, of the seed of David, according to my gospel. Risen from the dead speaks about the fact of His resurrection. But according to Romans 1 and other places, but especially Romans 1:4, it speaks about His deity, because He was designated, declared, He was distinguished as the Son of God with power, according to the Spirit of holiness, by the resurrection from the dead. So you're talking about His deity. That is why, though, His being of the seed of David happened first in time, and then later, some 30-some years, maybe approaching 40 years later, He rose from the dead. Yet, resurrection from the dead is put first, because what it indicates was first. His deity was first. He was always God. And at a point in time, He became of the seed of David, that is, He became humanity, and that with the first messianic qualification of His being risen from the dead, or rather His being of the seed of David. So be remembering. The tense in Greek is an ongoing thing. It's a present tense. Always be remembering Jesus Christ, risen from the dead, of the seed of David. And note also that that is according to my gospel. The things that risen from the dead and seed of David indicate, namely His deity and His humanity and messiahship, are part of the gospel. I know that other than here, you don't usually hear that presented as part of the gospel, but that's one of the places that we would look at, one of the verses that we would point to say that deity, humanity, incarnation, and messiahship are part of the gospel. And they must be communicated to be communicating the gospel. And with that having been said, we are involved in an ongoing study of our Lord Jesus Christ by means of the book of Proverbs. And thus, we've handed out to you my translation of the book of Proverbs, chapter 30, verses 32 and 33. Yes, not on cardstock this week, but on lime green, neon lime green. All right? Also, whoever, what does those in Hebrew, what does the word shalach mean? Shalach, not up there. It doesn't mean to shellac. All right, it does not mean to varnish something. But whoever did that, whoever shellacked this thing, or varnished it, whoever did this and made this all shiny, you know, put that stuff on it. Thank you. If you did that, if you're here tonight and you did this, Leslie did that. Thank you, Leslie. You were designated. All right. Proverbs 30, verses 32 and 33, our text. If you acted impiously by lifting yourself up, and if you have devised it, hand to mouth, because agitation of milk is causing butter, and agitation of a nose is causing blood, and agitation of angers is causing strife. All right, let's deal with verse 32 first. If you acted impiously by lifting yourself up. Lifting yourself up, that is, exalting yourself, promoting yourself. And this happens in the most subtle of ways sometimes. You want credit for something that you have done. Why do you want credit for something that you have done? Because you think that in the eyes of those who will now know that you did it, you will look better. You will be higher in their estimation. That's lifting yourself up. And as innocent as it might seem, unless you have such specificity of application, unless we had such definition, such precision of the practicable, if we did not have such, maybe you'd think, that's an innocent enough thing. Who doesn't want credit for that which they've done? Even in those kinds of things like that, that thought to want approbation that desires recognition is a lifting up of yourself. Why is it important that you have that recognition? Well, because you want to be viewed well. You want it to be noticed. There is pride. There is self-orientation there. That is, though, in our verse, acting impiously. Maybe you want to clean it up. Maybe you want to help me. You want me to help you clean it up. It's maybe not that you want recognition, but when somebody else is being credited with that which they didn't do, shall we call it the desire for justice? If you don't think it's just that they are receiving the accolades for doing that thing. You can call it the desire for justice if you like, but you know in your heart of hearts that if you were the person who did it and someone else was getting credit for this good work, that it is not so much a desire for justice, but it is a desire for the recognition. It's a subtle way of lifting yourself up. If you could do one thing that might be considered a good work or maybe a service, and you could do it anonymously, and it could get done, but you don't want to do it anonymously, you want people to know that you did it. It is a not such an overt, maybe, way, but it is a way of lifting yourself up. If you could do it anonymously with the same benefits to everyone involved, with the same advantages to all who would be the recipients, but you could do it in a way that it would be known, it would be recognized, your name would be associated with it. And so you choose to do it in the way that gets you that honor. It's maybe not the greatest self-exaltation, but it is self-exaltation. I was thinking about how Paul, in relation to this teaching, I thought about it. I was thinking about how Paul will often speak about his own motives when he's writing, or he'll tell you what you wouldn't know maybe unless he voiced it, or in this case, wrote it. And he's trying to make a point, and how if someone other than Paul, that is, if it were the same principle, and if it were the same motive, if all of the variables were identical, all things are equal, and yet it's not written in the Bible, but someone else says it. Let's say it's not in a written form. Let's say I say it. Let's say I say something about myself that Paul said about himself. There is in the idea of some that that is bragging, if it's a good thing. That that's a boast, that maybe it's an oblique reference to oneself. It's an oblique way of boasting. It might not be so outward, it might not be so obvious. You know what I mean by oblique? I didn't know what it was, except that I know there's these muscles on the side of your body here. They're called external obliques. And they make you bend this way, you know, or twist like this. They're not like straight on. They kind of come down in a sideways, sort of a diagonal way. They rest on the side of your waist. They rest obliquely. That's why they're called oblique. In other words, if I want to get my point across and I don't want it to be so obvious what I'm doing, I don't speak to you straight on. I speak to you in a kind of sideways fashion. I obliquely make reference to something. Many think that giving oneself as an example, and it's a good thing, in something that's admirable, is an oblique way to lift oneself up. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. I was thinking about Paul. I'll just give you an example. He says, I have become all things to all men so that by any means I might win some. Now one might hear that and say, well, he's bragging. He's vaunting himself. He's letting us know how right he is and how beyond the norm that he is. And it's not the case. It's in the scripture, right? It's a man under inspiration writing exactly what God would have him write. So some of the things that we would think of as one lifting themselves up, let's be careful that in judging them as lifting themselves up, we're not guilty of the same thing of lifting ourselves up to the position of judge and cast some judgment with evil suspicions, as James will refer to it. Do you see how subtle it is then? You think that that person's lifting themselves up. But really, you're the one lifting yourself up as you pronounce judgment upon something that I tell you, you can't know. Namely, motive. You can speak about what someone did. You can communicate what someone said, as long as it's accurate. But as soon as you go to why they said it, you realize that you're trafficking in the realm of omniscience. You realize that you are acting as if you are the only one that can really speak to motive, that you're talking about God here. You're acting like God. That's a lifting up of yourself. I sometimes wonder why people run for public office. Is it really the altruistic motive of, I think I can do good for this community or this nation? Or is there something of this impiety in lifting up of oneself? If you have acted impiously by lifting yourself up, you see that these subtle ways that we jockey for position, these psychological maneuvers, these games that we play, are labeled here as acting impiously. Let's talk about acting impiously. Well, no, let's talk a little bit about more about lifting oneself up. It was said about Saul, when God, through Samuel, addressed him, "When you were young and you were small in your own eyes," and then time goes on, and he speaks about, "Now you're proud, now you're arrogant, now you're conceited, now you're egotistical." Position tests the humility of individuals. Oh, this man is just the most solicitous, caring, compassionate, sensitive man. Then you get married. And his position, if he is a Christian, and he knows, "I am now in authority," tests the reality of that seeming humility. He now becomes the little tyrant. He now becomes the power tripper. And the wife and others that may be privy to it see how big he actually is in his own heart, because a little power has gone to his head. The actions, the outflow of that arrogance indicates it is the lifting up of himself. But it's acting impiously. If you are careful for your own aggrandizement, it is acting impiously. Now, this word that I'm translating, acting impiously, it is naval in Hebrew. Naval is usually translated like act foolishly, or to do something that is folly. And there are many words that get translated as foolishness, fool, or folly in the English Bible. But they have very distinct nuances, one from the other. This one, Naval, is where you get the word, the guy's name, Nabal, that you're used to reading of Abigail's husband. Seems like we've been encountering this more in the later chapters of Proverbs. Currently, we used to see the kasil and the awil that are both getting translated as fool, that we will translate as dullard or misosophist, respectively. But this one's been coming to the forefront in the latter chapters of the book of Proverbs, naval. Naval is, if you want to think of it as foolishness, and it is foolishness, if you want to think of it as foolishness, it's not just a kind of airheaded foolishness. It's not a silly innocence. It's not naivete. It's sinful. It's evil folly or foolish evil. To tag it best, I've translated it as acting impiously. It is impiety in action. If you have acted impiously, that is, irreverently toward God, by lifting yourself up, and if you have devised it, that is, if you didn't even act upon it, you just thought about it, you just planned it, you just had thought for it, how you can be viewed in a higher way by your peers. Well, then there's somewhat of an elliptical nature to this. I try to bring this out in the punctuation. Like, if you've done this, the prothesis of the sentence, and then there's just this hand to mouth. Like, it's not really a nice, neat sentence in Hebrew. Usually, how do you do it? How do you exalt yourself? How do you present yourself as worthy of this admiration? How is it that someone usually goes about pushing themselves into that category. It's usually by what they say. So, hand to mouth. That is, slap your mouth with your hand. Put your clasp, your hand over your mouth. Stop talking. Stop doing this. And if you've only devised it, then don't let this come out. Don't follow through. Don't make good on it. Hand to mouth. So it's usually in what someone says about themselves. Now here's the reason in verse 33. Because agitation, this is classic Agur, son of Yake, isn't it? This is the way he talks all the time. You have three things. The last of them is his point. Agitation of milk is causing butter. You know, when if you've ever gone to some of these places like Old Bedford Village, or you've gone down to the, wherever that is in Virginia, and you go to Colonial Williamsburg, that's where it is. You go to any of these places, and they try to transport you back in time through the Revolutionary War period, and you can go to the log house and see them make real butter. And then they'll charge you an arm and a leg to buy some of it because it was made right in front of you. You know, and you have that container, that utensil, that wooden vessel with a hole in the top, and there's a plunger kind of thing in there, and all you see is a stick sticking out of it. You pour this milk in there, and you just go like this, and you agitate that milk, and you do it for I don't know how long, and your arms are getting tired, but you're stirring up that milk. You can stir it like this in a circle. You can do this in a circle. Any way you do it, you have to put some pressure to this milk. You agitate the milk and it ends up as butter. Now think of this, I said, if you stir it. You can stir it, and then stir it the other way. I almost tried to translate this word agitation, because the word means pressure. You know, you put pressure to something, a certain kind of pressure. But it seemed like this could all be a pressure in each of these three situations that dealt with a circular movement. I almost thought, am I justified to translate this with some kind of word that has to do with torque? Do you know what torque is? T-O-R, I think it's G-U-E. Torque is turning power. It's a measurement of the power to turn something in a circle. Obviously, I didn't, because I thought, I don't think that's a little too far away from the Hebrew word. They know nothing about the measurement of turning power in the Bible. So, no, that's too far out. I'm not going to translate this as torque. But what you see in your conventional translations, if anyone's looking at, say your NKJV or your KJV, it's the, what is it, what they do with butter there, the churning of butter. Churning is one word, and the ringing of the nose. And then the, what is it, stirring up of anger do they have? Stirring is a circular motion. Ringing is a circular motion if it's the nose. And churning isn't, though. But it could be stirring. And so, thinking about this, I'm saying, I've got this word that means pressure. But what I really want to bring out to you is that it's the same word in each three of these cases. So churning, ringing, and stirring are not letting you see what is there in the Hebrew, that this is the same word. So I thought, what is the one word that will not do damage to what the Hebrew word actually means, but will work in each of these contexts? And I thought, agitation. And it especially works well in the last of our triad here, that is the point that he's trying to get to. So I translated it this way, because agitation of milk is causing butter. It's the idea of what is the product of this agitation? Well, if you do it to milk, the product is butter. And agitation of a nose is causing blood. It's any kind of agitation, you know. It could be ringing, but it could be punching. It could be, you know, somebody tripped and they fell and their nose hit the edge of that chair. It could be some accident. It could be some kind of mistake. But when some kind of pressure is put on your nose, you get a nosebleed, right? This is something you'll never get in any other church. Maybe there's somewhere. But let me tell you about this. If you're a female, and I've told you in the past, like, how are you not afraid everywhere you go? You people are weak. And there's people who are strong out there, who are males. And I watched this thing on television one time, and I thought, man, I actually thought, even to myself, I thought, maybe we ought to have a self-defense class for women in our church. Because I always try to walk you people out or have somebody walk you to your car, even though it's small town Indiana, and it's nighttime, and there's Sons of Belial out there. And I thought, I'm going to tell them this. I'm going to tell them about this particular agitation of the nose. I watched this thing. Kate, it was my big meal of the day. And it was nighttime. I'm sitting in front of the television. And there was this program on called Fight Science. Anybody ever see Fight Science? They do tests with torque. And they do tests with pressure. And they do tests with, you know, the blunt force of different things. And they test. They basically tell you how to really mess somebody up badly. And they were doing this. They had this guy who was a self-defense instructor, and they had this skinny woman and this big guy, and they tested this stuff. And they said, "So this is what you don't get. It's what you don't pay for. You know, this is like if you're female and you're ever out there and it's nighttime, and you're walking from church or whatever, and somebody accosts you." They said, right under your nose, the bottom of your nose is loaded with sensory nerves. And they're telling these people, just take the butt of your palm and with all the power you can muster, slam the butt of your palm under the underside of this guy's nose. Now, you all have noses, you all have undersides of noses, you all have felt pain before. Just think about that. Think about, Brock, think about if I just went with all my might, even if I was one of you weak ladies, with all the power you could generate, and you smack that guy up like that in the nose. Man, is that going to hurt? You know what that's going to cause? Blood. And a lot of pain. And that's what you're after. When you are a weak female and you're being accosted by some son of Belial, you want to inflict pain. All right? Bang! Like that. Agitation of the nose. Or ringing of the nose. I mean, it's agitation. But if you took somebody's nose and just, you're so cute, and just twist their nose, they're going to bleed. You're going to get a nosebleed. The product of this agitation is blood. Product of the first agitation of milk is butter. The product of the second agitation of the nose is blood. But here's what Augur is getting at. And get your fill of him. Enjoy him while you can. This is the last that you'll hear of Augur, the son of Yakeh. Next week it's King Lemuel has a chapter. And his mother. And agitation of angers is causing strife. It's causing reeve. The word I'm translating, strife. Agitation of angers. Now here's one that I can't use the same Hebrew word for. But I will just tell you about it. I'll let you see it by my telling you about it. Agitation of a nose is causing blood. And agitation of angers, it's the same word. It is the word knows in the plural. Remember, I've demonstrated it for you in the past when we've seen this word for knows that I translate as anger. And most people translate it as anger depending on the context. That when you get angry, you breathe heavily if you're really angry and your nostrils flare. Somebody that's that angry, that is the reason that the Hebrew word for anger is the same Hebrew word as the Hebrew word knows. Your context is going to determine how you translate it, either as knows or angers. Here it's in the plural, so noses. Agitation of noses is causing strife. But it's the third in a series, and, you know, I suppose you could say that if you kept doing this thing to somebody, or, you know, every time you saw somebody, you wrung their nose, I suppose that would cause strife. But I think you can see, if you know that the word anger is the same Hebrew word as nose, that we're talking about angers, not noses, plural here. This is what he's really getting at now. Agitation of angers is causing strife. You have a brother and a sister. That brother and sister, in the Lord, that brother and sister are at odds. There's something that's wrong. There is a relational rift. There is a division. There is ill feeling. There is ill will between this brother and this sister. There is a crucible in which that anger is being, is it aggravated or irritated? Either way, you know what I'm talking about. One of them's right, the other is not. But there's a situation that is grinding to one or both parties, and an anger is the result. Let's say you remove that crucible, or you say, here's the situation, here's the circumstance. The brother and the sister in there, and with the pestle, you know, it is causing anger. Anger, not strife. It's causing anger. Remove the crucible. Take the circumstance away. Let providence take the situation away. Do something yourself to get out of that set of events wherein that anger exists. And let time go on, not always, but sometimes, that worldly maxim might be true in that circumstance or in this situation. It is not true across the board. But maybe that time heals all wounds thing that you hear that isn't true. Sometimes it is. Alright, so we've got a situation. We've got two people, a brother and a sister, in that situation. Move the situation away, and the anger may die down over time. So that as a third party that knows the other two speaks about how are you in your relationship with this person? They could honestly say, you know, I was very angry with them at that time. But I'm over it, and I honestly don't bear any resentment to them. I have no bitterness toward them at all. Let that third party begin to agitate those old angers, and strife is going to be the result. By words like this, well, what's really any different? It's just that you're not in the situation. If you were in the situation, they would treat you the same way. They're the same person. You just took the person out of the situation. Why do you think that they feel any better toward you now? They're exactly the same. Have they ever asked your forgiveness? Have they ever repented to you? Have they ever said anything? Did they ever fix it? Did they ever apologize to you for that? No? Well then, you know, really, why are you so forgiving to that person? I think that you're setting yourself up. Because if you start trusting them again, now just keep imagining how this conversation that I'm, how this talk can continue. What is that person doing? They're agitating angers. That is, they're causing this thing to resurface. They're making you think things that they shouldn't make you think about. Listen, if you've forgiven the person, if you don't have a problem with them now, if you're living together finally, why would it be right to come in and start that up again? Why do you not rest unless there is strife somewhere? You know, in a church situation, the person that does that, they're a divisive person, something that I really don't teach you much on, epistles of 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, and Titus, because they're written to me. I'll refer to one in Titus 3:10, though. This person who likes to rekindle those things, start those fires up again, is what's called a divisive person. Such a one is to be warned at once. If they don't change their conduct, they are to be warned a second time. If they don't change their conduct, they're to be excommunicated. They're to be put out. Because the strife stoker is a cancer in that assembly. It's one of the six things, yea, seven, that God hates. It's on His hate list. One who sows discord among brethren. The production, the result of that talk that reminds you of offenses that you have forgotten about. That talk that it doesn't have to be exactly my situation. It doesn't have to exactly be my example. Any way that it can happen from now on, be aware of it. The person that is trying to poison your mind about someone else. The one who is slandering another so that you think ill of them. The person that isn't satisfied with people getting along is producing this strife. Maybe I'll do it next week for you. I looked at all the places where eris, the Greek word that I translate strife, and all of the places that reeve, the Hebrew word that I translate strife, are used. And then when I got here, I said, I had all of these written out, and there's a long list, and I thought, I forgot my notebook. It's at home. So I told my son, as we were singing hymns, I said, go get my notebook. It's a purple notebook on my desk. He went and he got my purple notebook and then he got here and I thought, it's in the red one. So, I don't have all of that list for you. And I can't remember them off the top of my head. But let me tell you about one of them that I do remember. Paul says, where there's strife, this is 1 Corinthians, Chapter 1, where there's strife, among other things, jealousy and strife. Aren't you carnal and walking as mere men? Yeah, that's the source of it. Galatians 5, 20-22 lists strife, as at least the way I translate it, as one of the productions that are evident, that are obvious. That nobody, it's like falling off a log to realize it. You're talking about one of the clear works of the flesh. So he says, aren't you fleshly? And then he goes to explain it. And he says, for where one of you says, I am of Paul, and another, I am of Apollos, and I am of Cephas, and I am of Christ. Are you not fleshly? What caused the strife? In other words, what was it that the flesh that causes it latched onto to divide and cause strife in Corinth? It was personality affinities, inordinate loyalties in the body of the Christ. That is, I like this teacher better than that one. I like the way Paul talks about the mystery all the time. These other guys, they don't even know about the mystery. Yes, they do. It's just not God's divinely assigned emphasis for them. They know it. Paul says they know it. He talks about the mystery which was hidden from all ages to all of the apostles and prophets and saints of old, but now has been revealed to His holy apostles, plural, and prophets in the Spirit. They know it. They just don't major on it like Paul does. I like how Paul talks about the mystery. These people, they don't have mystery teaching. They're just not up to that. They're not as wise anymore. Yes, they do. I like Apollos because he is a man of logoi. That is, he's a man of words. Man, when the way he puts it, the way he explains it, it's like he gets into your mind and transports you back to the time that these things were written and what we're talking about. He's so articulate. He is so eloquent. I could just sit and listen to Apollos all day long. But Paul says that though I am untrained in speech, literally he says in word, yet not in knowledge. That is, if you listen to Apollos, he could mesmerize you by the way he spoke it. If you listen to Paul, it might be a little difficult for you to keep your attention. But the knowledge is there like gangbusters. I like Peter. You know, he was one of the original 12. He got the keys of the kingdom. He's obviously the leading apostle. I like Cephas. I'm of Cephas. And the only group that was right was the fourth group that said, and actually you could even find fault with this one, I am of Christ. You know, if you were exactly right, you would say, we are of Christ. All of us are of Christ. Was Paul baptized for you? Or crucified for you, rather? Were you baptized in the name of Paul? This is a Lord Jesus Christ thing. So I want to ask you this question. What is an agitation of angers in that 1 Corinthians 1 passage? It is a lack of Christocentricity. If we could all say, not just I, but we all are of Christ. You're hitting the bullseye now. If we are all of Christ, and we all know that we are all of Christ, that means that we are all on the same plane. I am not better than you or worse than you. We are all equally in the perfect one, the Christ. And these other things, Paul, Apollos, and Cephas, and they are things in this sense. They all belong to all of us. Paul said, all things are yours, whether Paul or Apollos or life or death or the world, everything is yours. Why are you dividing over men? You see how subtle it is? You see how subtle that is? Have you ever done that? Have you ever sectioned off? Have you ever divided up over teachers, over men, over people? Whenever someone agitates, whether it's agitate, or however you want to think of it in the third of these examples. When somebody agitates angers, that is, They try to get people angry at each other. Christians not exempt, Christians not immune to this. They are causing the product of strife. Well, maybe next week I will, it maybe means perhaps, it could be, no promise, right? But maybe next week I'll show you all those things about strife. Like what causes it? But for now, let's read this again. If you acted impiously by lifting yourself up, and if you have devised it, hand to mouth. Because agitation of milk is causing butter, and agitation of a nose is causing blood, and agitation of angers is causing strife. The one having ears to be hearing, let him be hearing.